Monster Movie Media presents.
And welcome to episode 52 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast. A podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. And boy, oh boy, do we have a special treat for you today. We are going to be taking a look at the creepiest parts of probably one of the creepiest films Disney has ever released, The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Or Dame, depending on where you're from. So without any further ado, let's begin. Hello, everyone. I'm here with Miss Roxy Tart. Hello.
Hello.
And we have come together to bring you this episode of Creepy Kingdom, which will be about the 1996 film The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Coming to theaters, summer 1996. Walt Disney Pictures presents its all-new 34th full-length animated motion picture, The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Pour the wine and cut the cheese.
The magnificent Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris was the site where Disney animators drew their inspiration for the powerful story of Quasimodo, a man who lived in a world of isolation.
Remember, Quasimodo, this is your sanctuary.
But had the courage to dream of freedom.
And there, living in the sun.
What's going on out there? A fight? A flogging?
A festival?
Once a year we throw a party here in town.
Well, you're not hurt, are you?
No!
See? No harm done. By the way, great mask.
Look, he's got a friend with him.
Way to go, lover boy!
An all-star cast brings the characters to life.
All right, all right!
Including Demi Moore as the mysterious Esmeralda.
You.
And Kevin Kline as the heroic Phoebus.
Easy, easy. I just shaved this morning.
Oh, really? You missed a spot.
Mary Wicks, Charles Kimbrough, and Jason Alexander are the three wisecracking gargoyles.
It is a treat to watch the colorful pageantry of the simple peasant folk.
Oh, look. A mime.
And Tom Hulce is Quasimodo.
If I picked a day to fly, oh, this would be it.
Leave this place.
Arrest her.
Oh! Dang it.
What a woman.
How dare you defy me?
I think the cavalry's here.
This coming summer, experience the adventure.
Sit.
Whoa!
Of Walt Disney Pictures' newest animated entertainment event, The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Not Dame.
One of my favorites.
This is one of your favorites?
It is. It's one of my favorites.
Well, yeah. In fact, before we went to record this, I mentioned Roxy. I was like, all right, get ready. Rewatch the film. And she said, nope, don't need to.
I really don't. I cannot count the number of times I've seen this movie. In fact, I have been to Notre Dame. And the main reason that I went was because of this movie.
Wow.
And I got in trouble at Notre Dame for standing in that spot where the window reflects on the floor and singing God Help the Outcast at the top of my lungs.
Really?
They did not appreciate that at all in any way, shape, or form.
Who is they?
The the priests at Notre Dame.
So what happened?
I got in trouble. I got shh, and this old man comes over to me and shh, missed, shh, scusi, shh.
So what year was this?
That was 2000. That was 2000.
So that's still you know, within, you know, sort of right after its release. So you think that's something they were getting a lot of?
I'll bet it was. I have to think that it was. Like, if you're a Disney fan and you watch this movie and you were at Notre Dame. Oh my God. If you were at Notre Dame, how can you not want to sing? Like, I went up, I saw the big bell, you know, walked up the stairs and saw the big bell. I saw the gargoyles. Like, I was really excited. And a lot of it was because of this movie. You know, most of it was because of history. No, it was because of this movie.
Yeah, screw history. That's all. We love Disney movies, not history.
You know, I saw a lot of history on that trip. We did a lot of Paris and we did a lot in Rome, and there was a lot of history in Rome, and it was awesome. But no, Notre Dame was all about Hunchback.
All right, right on, right on. So you are very emotionally invested in this. So
I am. I am. It was awesome. I wish we had had a video camera with us so that I had a video of it, or at least audio so we could, like, play it.
Right. But that would be ideal for the podcast. I don't know why we weren't thinking of this podcast 15 years ago when you did it.
I should have been. I totally should have been. It was my honeymoon that I was on at the time, and I looked at my husband and was like, why didn't you record that? He's just like, what do you want me to record it on? I don't know. We should have brought a video camera, you know?
You know, and that's why you're not married to that man anymore.
No, because he didn't take the opportunity to record me singing God Help the Outcast in Notre Dame. It's terrible.
Makes
grounds for divorce.
Sounds like, I agree. You know, sounds like it to me.
Right? Of course, we also didn't have, you know, smartphones, which would have made it a lot easier. Next time I go, I will be sure to get that.
All right. You'll be shushed again. But but yeah, no, I know when we first started doing the podcast, I declared that we'd be going in chronological order. And, you know, we've since made the decision to not do that. Just inspiration hits. And we're just going to hop to it. And
we owe someone a shout out for this idea.
Oh yeah, I was about to say Hunchback. Yeah, I was going right there. I was going right there. Yep.
Look at that. Great minds. Yep. Great minds.
We were inspired to do this episode on Instagram from Cherry Delish.
Yay! We and like her.
You had posted something on your Instagram. That's what started it, right?
I think it was on the Bangarang Bunch Instagram.
Okay, so yeah, you posted something to do with Frollo. I don't recall exactly what it was, but it was disturbing.
Whatever it was disturbing because it was about Frollo. No, I posted something on the Bangarang Bunch Instagram. Shout out to the Bangarang Bunch by Disneyland Social Club. And Cherry Delish commented on it and tagged Creepy Kingdom and was like, hey, maybe you should do a show about this guy. He's really creepy. And here we are.
Directly, you ask Cherry Delish, you shall receive, and so shall everyone else. So,
that's right. We're givers over here.
Let's get the party started. Of course, this will be spoilerific, so if for some reason you haven't seen it, stop what you're doing right now. It's on Netflix streaming. If you enjoy this podcast, you will enjoy this film.
Yeah.
I will say. It's a pretty high likelihood.
You know what? That is a totally true statement. If you enjoy the Creepy Kingdom podcast, Hunchback is the movie for you. Yeah. If you do not enjoy the Creepy Kingdom podcast and think that we are really crazy or out there or like bad people, you probably shouldn't watch this movie. Just saying.
Right. All right. Let's get into it. Roxy, take us away.
In 1482, Paris Clopin, a gypsy puppeteer, narrates the origin of the titular hunchback, A group of gypsies sneak illegally into Paris, but are ambushed by Judge Claude Frollo, the Minister of Justice. A gypsy woman in the group attempts to flee with her deformed baby, but Frollo chases and kills her outside Notre Dame. He tries to kill the baby as well, but is stopped by the cathedral's archdeacon. Stop! Cried the archdeacon, who accuses Frollo of murdering an innocent woman. To atone for his sin, Frollo agrees to raise the deformed child in Notre Dame as his son, naming him Quasimodo.
Yeah, I think right off the bat, I mean, I don't know how many minutes in, but...
It's like a minute.
Yeah.
It's like 2 minutes in, and Frollo has already murdered a single mom, mm-hmm. okay, and tries to murder a baby by drowning it in a well. Thank goodness for the archdeacon.
That is pretty dark.
Right?
You could try to be like, oh, you know... Especially a lot of older Disney animated films, some real kind of dark stuff will happen, and you know, a lot of people tend to brush it off a little bit, like they don't really think about what they're seeing, you know. But it's hard when you know someone's about to throw a baby down a well in the first minute of a Disney animated film.
You know what? I can't. For the longest time, I have said Scar is like the worst of the Disney villains, because he actually murders someone. He kills Mufasa. But no, I am officially changing my mind. It's Frollo. In the first 2 minutes, he kills someone. He kills a woman and tries to murder a baby. A baby. Who cares if he's deformed? Poor little special needs kid.
Yeah, no, well, you know.
I hate that guy.
He didn't care.
Gosh, such a jerk.
and he's just gotten started. So,
right? It's 2 minutes in. But yeah, and since we're going to talk about, you know, since this is Creepy Kingdom, and we should mention the creepy things that happen in the movie, in that scene, when the archdeacon stops him and Clopin is talking about, you know, telling the story about it damning his immortal soul, Frollo looks up and there's like the saints staring at him. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? Like statues staring at him, and they're all dark and judgy and whatnot. Yeah. And, like, it just starts the whole movie on this like dark, creepy, you know,
Which
saints judgy.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's it's funny because, or amusing, because you might think as you start watching this, oh, the beginning of this gets kind of dark, and then it's fun. But I feel like, it really, besides a few scenes I'll bring up, it really keeps this dark tone the whole movie.
Yeah, it is. It is. Most Disney movies are light, fun movies, and they have dark moments to, like, bring out the villainy and, you know, build the bad guy and whatnot. This is a dark movie that has light moments to lighten it up and make it a
right.
kids movie.
Exactly. Like,
this and The Black Cauldron are definitely the least, in my opinion, the least kid-friendly of all of the Disney movies, like the Disney animated features.
I'll bring up Black Cauldron a little bit later.
That's a topic for another show.
No, I mean, in this episode, we'll bring it up a little bit. But, you know, no, very true. I can't think of anything else offhand that's even close. So, 20 years later, Quasimodo develops into a kind yet isolated young man who dreams of seeing life outside of a bell tower. A trio of living stone gargoyles. Gargoyles. I always say that word weird. Gargoyles. Serve as Quasimodo's only company, encouraging him to attend the annually held Festival of Fools.
Which is January 6th, by the way. I just wanted to
know. Oh, we just missed it?
That.
No.
Yeah.
No, we should have done this earlier.
I know, right?
Despite Frollo's advice that he would be shunned for his deformity, Quasimodo attends the festival and is celebrated for his bizarre appearance, only to be humiliated by the crowd after Frollo's men start a riot. Frollo refuses to help Quasimodo, but Esmeralda, a kind gypsy, intervenes by freeing the hunchback, uses a magic trick to evade arrest. Frollo scolds Quasimodo and sends him back into the cathedral.
There is so much in this paragraph
that I want to talk about.
I know. Oh my god.
This is quite a paragraph. This is quite a part of the movie.
Okay, so I don't even know where to start. Let's start with those gargoyles.
All right, let's bring it back to the gargoyles. All right,
bring back to the gargoyles. We'll start there. Walking, talking, living gargoyles, who obviously have no conscience because at the end of the movie they like kill people. Okay,
spoiler alert.
Creepy. And it's been established. We even talked about it before we started recording that the gargoyles are real. They are not part of Quasimodo's imagination. These are real stone creatures that have come to life and are like kicking it in Notre Dame.
They're kicking it.
That's weird. I think we can all agree. If you saw that in real life, you might freak out.
Right. I mean, I guess that's an interesting point here is that for the most part, the film is kind of grounded in reality. So that is an odd element of it. And but they're there to be comic relief.
And they do a good job.
Yeah, which I was going to say, I feel normally comic relief sticks out like a sore thumb in Disney films. But, I didn't mind it. As I was preparing for the episode, I watched, like some old videos, some old commercials and trailers for it. And it's funny, I saw several commercials and trailers that had just the gargoyles and made it look like this lighthearted comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, would they be mistaken.
Ooh, hey, bring your kids to see this movie. Fine, wholesome family fun. Just kidding.
And they're also, at around the same time, there was a show made by Disney called Gargoyles, so I don't know if that was another push to put them in there.
I don't know, but it is one of the greatest Disney cartoons of all time. I'm just throwing that out there. Okay. Moving on. Okay.
And I'll say my last note on the Gargoyles is that I'm a huge fan of Jason Alexander. But... So I don't mind hearing him in that, but it also kind of takes me out of the movie hearing George Costanza throughout it.
See, and I'm a huge fan of his, but not from Seinfeld.
As a Broadway
performer. Yeah. Yeah, as a Broadway performer. So he was in Bye Bye Birdie, and I loved him in Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh, I haven't seen... Actually, I've never seen any of his on-stage performances.
Yeah, I loved him in Bye Bye Birdie. He was in a televised performance of it, and I have the soundtrack and everything, and that was back in the 90s. And then when I saw this movie, it was a few years before this movie, and then I saw this movie, and I was like, oh, I love him! But I don't watch Seinfeld, so I don't know him from that, so it's a little different for me.
I guess so. All right. Any other note on the gargoyles before we move on to the next thing?
We
had the Festival of Fools.
The Festival of Fools. So the Festival of Fools, it was a real thing historically. It's time for history lessons with Roxy. The Festival of Fools wasn't exactly like it is in the movie, obviously, but it was a real celebration in France. And it was like a big carnival type thing. It takes place in January. It kind of went along with the Feast of Epiphany, which is on January 6th. It's a feast that's like a Roman Catholic tradition. We talked about it on the Christmas episode when we talked about La Befana.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole Festival of Fools part of it is while the church was celebrating with their feast, the peasants would celebrate in their own way. And that's how the whole kind of Festival of Fools came.
Okay.
And a lot of it was them kind of making fun of the church and having their own feasts and playing games and, stuff like that. So,
interesting. Oh, I think that you discussed that on the Disney Dreamgirls episode that we did of Minxmas.
That's right. That's yes. What it was.
So if you haven't heard that, what are you doing? Check it out. But that wasn't actually on Creepy Kingdom, but it was the Creepy Kingdom episode of
Minxmas.
Yes.
For Christmas time. You should go listen to all of that. All of it. But yeah, so that's what the Festival of Fools was. And in this movie, it's basically the same thing. It's a bunch of peasants having a big ceremony and making fun of everything that the church wants them to believe.
And it's odd that it's kind of not really knowing that what you just said, watching it, that it's still, it's really, it's celebrated by everyone And you know, no one shut
Frollo.
No one.
He's not real happy.
He's not happy, but he's not. He didn't shut it down.
No, well, it was one of those festivals where it was like it was permitted, but a lot of people in charge weren't really happy about it, you know. But yeah, I think it's really funny that when you watch it, you know, all of these people are having a really good time, and then you've got Frollo who looks like, you know, he's being made to sit there and
yeah, he does look miserable. He's not having a good time, you know, by any means.
I'm not sure he can have a good time though. No, that's a jerk. I'm gonna say that throughout this whole podcast.
Well, one of the things I thought was cool at the Festival of Fools was they had these devil head balloons. So that actually, I thought that was kind of random, but now knowing a little more of the backstory of what actually is going on, it kind of shows why they had those.
Yep. You have to remember, there were a lot of people that didn't like the church. You know, we were coming out of the whole pagan thing and into the whole religion thing, and there were a lot of people that were like, nah, you can take your stuff and go over there with it. So this was their opportunity to kind of have fun and poke a little fun at them and that kind of stuff.
Huh. It's funny. I mean, kind of without knowing too much about it, it seems similar to Mardi Gras celebration.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. Mardi Gras is all about, Mardi Gras is all about celebrating before Ash Wednesday. Obviously, it's Fat Tuesday before Ash Wednesday, and the saying is that you sow your wild oats on Mardi Gras, and on Ash Wednesday, you pray for a bad crop.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But yeah, kind of the same thing.
All right, cool. Very perceptive. So, so one thing that happens here that they also kind of skimmed over in the plot points there, you know, is that Quasimodo comes down and he seems celebrated, and then there's a bunch of people wearing crazy masks that Esmeralda goes to take off, and then realize, you know, that he can't take off his mask because he's not wearing a mask.
And he becomes the King of Fools.
Yeah.
Like, that, what an awesome moment in his poor little life. And he becomes the King of Fools, and everybody's yelling and celebrating him, and he must have felt so good and so happy. And then this jerk face Frollo decides that he should just let his jerk face guards get all uppity, and they start throwing fruit at him.
Yeah. So not only they start throwing fruit at him, they tie him up like he's a creature. They quarantine him.
Yeah, and they put him up on that thingy. And, like, they tie him up and they, like, display him so that people can throw stuff at him and humiliate him.
Like he's, like, hog-tied. It looks like,
yeah.
That.
It's disgusting.
I thought that was kind of, that was very dark.
Yeah. I'm not sure it was creepy, but it was dark for sure. Like, this whole movie's got just these dark, dark things that happen. And, of course, then Esmeralda comes and she saves him. I love how in the description, though, can we just point out that it says, but Esmeralda, a kind gypsy, intervenes by freeing the hunchback. They felt the need to put in a kind gypsy, because not all the gypsies in this movie are so kind. Like, I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah,
they had to
point.
Throw that in there.
And I guess before we move on, I think this is the part I should say that I just absolutely love Esmeralda and everything about her.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
If you don't like Esmeralda, maybe this isn't the podcast for you. If you don't like pretty gypsy girls who do, like, scarf dances and twirl around spears like a stripper pole, this might not be the place for you.
And when she does the magic trick, I love that Frollo yells, witchcraft!
Yeah.
Which later almost pays for that magic trick for performing quote-unquote witchcraft.
She's awesome. I love that little dance scene.
Yeah.
She's rad.
Maybe a little sexy for
maybe.
A Disney film?
No. I mean, yes, for a Disney film. But there's no maybe about it. I'm sorry. Esmeralda's a sexy cartoon character. You know, not in like the way Jessica was, but
no.
She's definitely, as far as the, I mean, she's not a princess. She's a heroine. So as far as the Disney heroines go, I think we kind of got to give it to Esmeralda at that point. She was definitely the hottest of them all. You know, later on we got Meg, and she had a little sass to her too. But can you imagine the two of them teaming up?
Nope. That's a little too much. Yeah, and then that was, I believe, Hercules is the next movie after this, so.
So whoever was writing these, whoever was making these, was all about the, like, strong female sassy character. So I applaud you, whoever you were. I don't actually know who came up with these girls.
Well, you know.
Sorry. I have a lot of Disney knowledge, but that is not one of them.
Whoever you are.
Whoever you are, I like you. So. Esmeralda then follows Quasimodo back inside, but she's followed by Captain Phoebus of Frollo's guard. Phoebus, it means sun god, does not approve of Frollo's methods and refuses to arrest her for alleged witchcraft inside Notre Dame, and instead has her confined to the cathedral. Esmeralda finds and befriends Quasimodo, who helps her escape Notre Dame out of gratitude for defending him. She entrusts Quasimodo with a pendant containing a map to the gypsy's hideout, the Court of Miracles. Frollo soon develops lustful feelings for Esmeralda, and upon realizing them, begs the Virgin Mary to help save him from her spell to avoid eternal damnation. After Frollo learns of her escape, he instigates a citywide manhunt for her, which he burns down all kinds of people's houses. Phoebus realizes Frollo's evil reputation and defies Frollo, who sentences him to death. Phoebus is injured, falls into a river, but Esmeralda rescues him, takes him back to Notre Dame, which she had just escaped from. And then the gargoyles encourage Quasimodo to confess his feelings for Esmeralda, but he is heartbroken to discover she and Phoebus have fallen in love. This paragraph reads like a telenovela. I feel like... This is a soap opera, right?
Right.
I think I saw this on General Hospital. Pretty sure. Okay. Wow, there's a lot to talk about in there. That's a big chunk of the movie.
Yeah.
We'll start. Okay. You know what? Let's start with Phoebus. It means sun god. Sorry, I really like that line in the movie. I think it's really funny. I really like him. He goes against what Frollo says, and Frollo orders him to be killed. Like, that's... I don't want to do what you say. I don't agree with you. Death to you! Seriously? This is like... He is a decorated captain of the guard who was sent to this town to help with... You know, he's not even under Frollo's, like, command. Like... And I don't like what you're doing. Something seems wrong with burning peasants' houses for no reason. You should die. Like, what is wrong with this guy? You know, this is just another example of why Frollo is a horrible, horrible human being.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he orders him to set fire to innocent people's houses. He says he won't do it. So then he still sets fire to the house, then orders him to be killed. Is about to behead him.
It's ridiculous.
Like, he's very intense, to say the least. But we need to take a few steps back here because talk about what I find to be not only the creepiest thing in the movie, but what I really feel is what this movie is all about to me, which is this part of Frollo... begging the Virgin Mary to save his soul from this quote-unquote spell, where he performs the song Hellfire.
One of the greatest music videos in Disney history.
This is intense. I mean, basically, the point of this song is I mean, you know, they summed it up there, but... it's basically saying, she, like, I want her... So, she better want me back, or else she's going to burn in hell.
Let her burn in the fires of hell, or else let her be mine and mine alone. That is one of his lines. He is literally saying that this woman, if she doesn't want him, deserves to die.
Yep.
I wish you guys could see my face. I know James can say it. I'm like literally speechless. I don't even know how. I can't.
And the imagery when he says that in the film is there's obviously fire all in this the sequence. Is, you know, a fiery shadow of Esmeralda dancing like that. That is some evil, you know, that looks like that belongs in Fantasia, you know, in Dirt and Night on Bald Mountain, like evil, like that.
Yeah.
Like...
again, it's these like judgy saints staring down at him, you know, like lining the walls and staring down at him, and there's fire everywhere, and he plays like he's the victim here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Ave Maria, please help me and save my soul because this witch has cast a spell on me. But I really like this chick.
See, to me, that's the thing. I don't really feel like he's really playing the victim. I feel like he totally contradicts himself in the song. I think he knows that he's full of it. That's kind of the way that I interpret it. You know, I didn't think he was delusional.
I think he's beyond delusional the whole movie, personally. But this, I have a really hard time with this song, okay? This is a Disney podcast, and we are not going to get into it. But I have a really hard time with this song, because aside from the cool, creepy, scary saints and fire and stuff like that, this song is so chauvinistic, like anti-feminist. It's painful. Painful. Well, it's horrible. I hate that guy. I just hate him so much. He literally says, I like this girl, and if she doesn't want me back, she deserves to die.
There it is.
What? I hate this guy. God. I need to take a
So pass. It's safe to say Frollo is not one of those villains you love to hate.
No! You're lucky we can't swear on this show. Do you have your beep Roxy button ready? I'm all right. I'm good. Let's go on.
All right. There's a part where the gargoyles are encouraging Quasimodo to confess his feelings for Esmeralda. This is done in song. In a very wacky...
Probably the most ridiculous scene of the movie.
Like, this is this was forced into this movie. This song does not belong in this movie. At all.
You know that someone watched it and was like, we need something to lighten this up. There needs to be some slapstick comedy so in the middle of this movie. This is getting bad.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought it was really bad. Like, it was just, you know, it was, I don't know, it was kind of like trying to be like Aladdin genie-esque in its presentation. And it just, I don't know, it's just a little too wacky for the movie, I thought.
I agree. It certainly did lighten the mood, though. It did what it was supposed to do. It lightened the mood. It gave the kids something happy to look at after watching the hellfire scene. You know, I saw this movie in the theater, okay? And I wish I was so in shock from watching that hellfire scene. The fact that that was a Disney movie in a theater full of children, like, I wish I had been in less shock and I had thought to look around so I could see the looks on people's faces.
Right.
Like, I can't even imagine what children were thinking after seeing this. Let's go see a Disney movie. This will be fun.
Gargoyles are wacky. All right, yeah, I just wanted to bring that up. So
maybe that's the creepiest part of the movie.
That song, yeah. Just weird. So Frollo returns to Notre Dame later that night and realizes that Quasimodo helped Esmeralda escape. He bluffs to Quasimodo, saying he knows about the Court of Miracles and intends to attack at dawn. Using the map Esmeralda gave him, Quasimodo and Phoebus find the court to warn the gypsies, only for Frollo to follow them and capture all the gypsies present. Frollo prepares to burn Esmeralda at the stake after she rejects his advances, as we just talked about. But Quasimodo rescues her, brings her to the cathedral. Phoebus releases the gypsies and rallies the citizens of Paris against Frollo and his men who try to break in the cathedral. Quasimodo and the gargoyles pour molten copper onto the streets to ensure no one enters. But Frollo successfully breaks in. He pursues Quasimodo and Esmeralda to the balcony where both he and Quasimodo fall over the edge. Frollo falls to his death in molten copper while Quasimodo is caught in time by Phoebus on a lower floor. Afterward, Quasimodo comes to accept that Phoebus and Esmeralda are in love and give them his blessing. The two encourage him to leave the cathedral into the outside world, where the citizens hail him as a hero and accept him into society.
That is the absolute most vanilla description of what happens in that part of the movie I have ever heard.
Which part?
The whole paragraph.
Oh. Oh, you mean this? Everything we just said, yeah.
Yes, because it's the climax of the movie. There's a lot of crazy stuff that happens, and, you know, we'll write it as vanilla as we possibly can. Okay, so now we get to talk about my favorite part, right, which is the Court of Miracles. I love the Court of Miracles. It's probably my favorite song in the movie. It's my favorite part, and it's creepy as crap because we'll just start with the fact that they live under a cemetery.
Yep, you got to enter a tomb.
Enter through a tomb. You enter the Court of Miracles through a tomb. Okay, we'll start there. They live in a cemetery. No, but is it just you walk down the steps into a tomb and you're in this nice place? No. No, you have to walk through the catacombs of, like, medieval Paris, where these creepy gypsies are literally wearing dead people hiding in the shadows.
I mean, when you first see what they're around, it must have been, I don't know, like, 500 skeletons.
Right?
Everywhere.
The gypsy, think about it. Let's say it one more time for the folks in the back. The gypsies are wearing dead people. They are wearing dead people. What the heck? And then to scare people to come in, they come to life and start dancing in their dead people clothes.
And puppeteer skeletons. I just want to throw that in there.
Yeah, they have taken the time to put these skeletons together so that they stick in their forms and tied strings to them and use them as puppets to creep people out. Like, these gypsies are some messed up people. I love them.
Yeah.
I love them. And we go back to earlier when they said Esmeralda was a kind gypsy, because they were obviously saying that she is not like Clopin, who is one of the most messed up gypsies ever. Okay, he's the head of the gypsies. He chose where they live. He makes them wear dead people. He makes them puppeteer skeletons. And then we're not going to question these people. We're not going to ask their names or see who they are or what they want. No, we're just going to hang them.
Yeah, no, I mean, straight up right to the old hanging setup there, you know, like.
No questions asked. We're just going to hang them in front of everybody. Hey guys, after dinner entertainment.
How is this movie rated G? I mean, I'll get into that later a bit. But I'm just like, I guess there's so much death. I mean, and that it as an adult that likes horror, like some of these scenes are like they're executed so well that they make me uneasy, some of the things that happen in it. And I guess maybe as an adult you know the stakes, and as a kid you don't, so you don't really understand what's happening. But that's, you know, that's to be debated, you know. You know, totally. The whole rating system I think is like BS anyway. But that's, I know, that could have been done, you know. They didn't have to be like, we're about to hang these people, like.
Right, thank goodness for Esmeralda. And she wasn't even there. Like, she happens to walk in as Phoebus and Quasimodo are about to swing to their deaths and be like, wait a minute, I know these guys.
Like, it's all good.
Hey, can you press pause real quick? Like, on this whole execution thing? You know, but you're right. If you were to take this exact movie, and I know that the movie Hunchback of Notre Dame has been made numerous times, but if you were to take this exact Disney version and make it, it take out the songs and make it a real life movie and not a cartoon, it would be a horror movie.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, but the fact that it's a cartoon, it's got Disney on it, we threw in a few good songs and has some talking gargoyles, like, then it's okay.
If they had if they did this a live action movie and it had talking gargoyles in it,
still creepy. Still a horror movie. Now those are monsters. I love this movie. Like I said, it's one of my favorite Disney movies. I really hate Frollo, like really, really, really much. But I do love this movie, and I love the gypsies. They're my favorite part.
Yeah, so this part was great. I wish this was a place that you could visit, you know, like in a theme park, you know,
yep,
something like that.
They did have a Hunchback thing at Disneyland for a while.
What was it?
It was just like a little show. It was back in the Roundup area, the Big Thunder Ranch.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And it was like a stage show, and Esmeralda came out and danced, and Clopin came out, and it was like a little Festival of Fools thing. Cool. Yeah. I wish they still had it. That would be awesome.
And I think other than that, you know, there's not really any Hunchback presence except Frollo is comes out during Nikki's Not So Scary during the whatever the villains party is. I'm drawing a blank on it. The villains show.
Yeah, he comes out. He comes out a couple different times throughout the years. I met him. I have pictures with Frollo.
I thought you didn't like him. Now you're taking pictures with him?
I don't, but... You know, when you see him in the park, you just kind of... I have a collection of character photos, and I didn't have Frollo, okay? Right. So I had to get a picture with Frollo. So it doesn't mean I was happy about it.
All right. Back to the movie.
Not like I was going to yell at the poor actor.
How dare you?
Right? No, the only other presence that Hunchback has in the park is in the new Princess Fantasy Fair. In Fantasyland at Disneyland, there's a little box, and you can, it's like a little, it's not a game exactly, but it's this little thing. Anyways, you turn the thingy and Clopin is in it and he dances and does a little thing. I think Quasimodo like rings a bell and it's cool. It's really neat.
I didn't see that because it's super explore cute. That area.
Yeah, we didn't go over there. I guess you'll have to come back.
I guess so. But yeah, no, he gets in there, and I guess his army outnumbers the gypsies.
Because he rounds them all up and puts them in cages like animals.
Yep. And then it's time to burn Esmeralda at the stake. That's right.
Yeah, oh, but not before he gives her the opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
He leans in. All hellish. Geezy and nasty old man creepy leans in and breathes down her neck and is like, you should come back to my place with me so we can get it on. And she spits in his face and he yells to, she has refused to repent for her evil witchcraft, feminine wild doings. We should burn her to death.
I mean, that's something there.
I hate him.
I mean, that's got to be, it has to be the only time in an animated Disney film that somebody spit in someone else's face.
Right?
I mean, I'm not sure, but I'd feel pretty confident that I don't recall ever seeing that before.
No, I'm pretty sure. She does, though.
So,
and then he lies, you know, to make himself look better. Well, and is like, she refuses to repent. She's a bad girl. I'm a good guy. You should all listen to me. I'm sorry. The feminist in me just hates him so much. I'm okay.
All right. We'll get through this. But, yeah, so we just got over, like, possible hangings. There's beheadings that almost happened. And now, you know, and all the other things we talked about. And now we're looking at a woman tied to a stake about to be set on fire in this fun-loving film.
There's no about to be about it. They set her on fire.
You're right. It happened. Well, I mean, she didn't get caught on fire, but they...
Well, but she passes out from, like, smoke inhalation.
Right.
Because she's basically dead. Quasimodo flies down and she passes out. And Quasimodo flies down and he grabs her and he takes her back up. But
on a rope, by the way.
Yeah.
He doesn't fly.
He Tarzans right down into that church square and saves her. And like, but you know, but she's laying there and he's like trying to give her water. And of course he doesn't know about like CPR and whatnot. Well, he doesn't.
No, he did not take those CPR training courses.
No.
Furlough suggested.
He really didn't. I mean, obviously he should have, but like, you know, they let you think that she is dead. She is done.
Did you really think that? I mean, come on.
No.
I mean, even the first time you watch that, you're like, yeah.
No, so, definitely not.
Especially if she were to die, it would not have been in that manner. Like, you know.
Although, I mean, when you think about it, this movie was so dark in places that if it had happened, it would have just gone along with the other stuff in the movie that people were like, oh, my word. Did that just happen?
No, I mean, I believe that she could have died. I just didn't think it would be, like, later on from smoke inhalation. I feel like they would have actually made her burn at the stake, you know?
God! How gruesome would that have been? Then the end of the movie would have been Phoebus and Quasimodo, like, sitting on the steps, their head in their hands, going, dude, that we had a bad night.
Wow.
That sucked.
That sucked, dude. Well, let's dust off and see what tomorrow brings us.
I don't feel much like a hero here in Paris. Maybe we should take the show on the road.
So then there was the revolt that they talked about. Right?
Oh, yeah, and here we go with our creepy gargoyles again, killing people like it's no big thing. Molten copper. They burned these people to death.
Right.
You know, and that scene, oh God, I love that scene when they pour it out and it goes through all of the gutters and it comes out the mouths of the like of the other gargoyle heads.
Yeah.
Like they're spitting fire and and down onto the people below where it burns them to death. and the gargoyle set up the catapult. And of course they do it wrong and send the whole catapult over, but it lands on top of a group of people and smushes them.
Yeah, they're just slaughtering people left and right, man.
This is a dark movie.
But amongst all this, I do want to point out there, you know, it's not necessarily creepy, but there was a nice homage to The Wizard of Oz.
I love that part, Laverne. He's so happy.
Where she releases the bats and goes, "Fly, my pretties, fly!"
Not bats, James.
They weren't bats?
No, they're pigeons.
They were pigeons. So it was
for the whole movie. She has these issues with the pigeons. They want to keep like sitting on her and like nesting on her and stuff. And through the whole movie, she's got these little lines where she's like arguing with the pigeons. And at the end of the movie, those are the pigeons.
Wow, you know,
she fly my pretties, and all of the pigeons go out and attack.
That's funny. I just wanted it to be bats, I guess, because everything else was so dark and creepy.
No, it's pigeons, which I'm a huge pigeon fan. I know that sounds really stupid.
What?
But I know. One of these days you're going to have to get Keegan on the show to tell you about my pigeon obsession. I love pigeons. Okay. They're the rats of the sky, and I love pigeons. So, and I always have for years and years and years. So when the movie came out and it had the pigeon thing, I was like, yes, she's using pigeons. And then when we went to Paris and we went to Notre Dame, the reason that they use pigeons is because Notre Dame is just infested with pigeons. Oh, okay. They are everywhere. So that was a joke. That's why they use them. But the whole time we were there, these two pigeons followed me around. Like, they followed me inside the cathedral. Oh, I have pictures of them, like, just kicking it next to me. These two pigeons just followed me. They were my pigeons of Notre Dame. I named them Esmeralda and Phoebus, and we just, like, walked around. I fed them and stuff. It was awesome.
Wow. I had no idea how important pigeons were.
You didn't know about my pigeon obsession?
I don't know about your – even in this movie, I didn't know how important it was.
Yeah, no. Those were pigeons that she sent attacking those people, and it was fabulous and glorious.
All right. Well, one of the last things, I mean, besides, you know, the big battle, but when Quasimodo thinks Esmeralda is dead, and then Frollo comes in and pretends like he's going to console Quasimodo, but he's got a knife behind the back, like he's about to kill Quasimodo. Again, like, right at that moment, just, like, that is just intense. Like, that is, like, as you're watching the movie, the woman he loves is dead in front of him, and he's crying over her, and the person that he trusted his whole life is about to literally stab him in the back.
Yeah. Murder. So much murder in this movie.
Luckily, the sun was set, on the side that it does, and there was a shadow coming in where he saw the knife and was able to react in time.
So much murder. I'm going to call this the murder movie from now on.
Yeah, that's what the death count is pretty high.
Really is.
So yeah, I have one more thing to say about kind of the way things end up at the end, where it talks about Quasimodo accepts that Phoebus and Esmeralda are in love. This always bugged me about the movie.
Did you think that he should have gotten the girl?
I do. I feel like that should. I mean, if you really wanted to drive the point home,
that it's okay to be different.
Yeah,
that is the whole point of this movie. Yes. Is that it's okay to be different.
You know, the hunky dude should not have just gotten the girl just because he's the hunky dude. I feel like this is the one movie where that should not have happened.
But don't you understand that that would have been pushing the envelope too far?
That.
I mean, come on.
That's where you draw the line.
That is their window on the monorail. Okay, that is just too much.
He earned it. He earned it.
The hero has to get the girl. Like,
he earned it. It's not like it wasn't just arbitrary. Like, he was trustworthy. He saved her. He saved her boyfriend or her love interest.
Yep.
There was a whole musical number about how he should go after her. Like,
but nope. In the end, the bad guy is vanquished, and the sun god gets the girl.
Yeah, I just that bugs me. I don't know. I just wanted to point that out.
I agree.
Even when he's like, it says he gives them the blessing. I mean, like, he just smiles at it, you know.
Right. He like shrugs his shoulders and is like, "Well, what can I do?"
Yeah. And when I see, you know, that part, I'm like, no.
Then in the sequel, he's like their babysitter.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched that, but I did read the synopsis of it, and I was like, wow, you're just not in a good way, man. You're just
poor Quasimodo.
Like that, yeah, he should have got her, but you know, he didn't. But you know, whatever. Obviously, you said what you felt about this movie. I'll say that, you know, I really like it a lot. I have a few criticisms of it, very minor, but obviously, just, the movie is so dark and creepy, and there's so much awesomeness to it that I enjoy it. I think that just, and also visually, it is very, it's very beautiful.
It is. It's gorgeous.
This is definitely a story made during the Disney Renaissance, and you could tell, this is a few films before it started going downhill. I mean, I can't honestly say this, to be clear. I say it starts going downhill. I haven't even watched all those, a lot of those movies, so I can't even, like, Brother Bear and whatever. So maybe they're awesome movies. I don't know.
Well, I have, so.
All right.
So there.
Is it awesome?
Brother Bear wasn't bad. I'm not going to say it was a bad movie. I mean, if you put Hunchback and Brother Bear in front of me and said, which one do you want to watch? I'm going to choose Hunchback. But it wasn't bad, and like Home on the Range. Home on the Range gets a lot of hate, but it's a funny movie. I've seen it like 100 or 2 times. I'm not even kidding.
You are just a Disney film fan.
I am. I really am. I could bust you out a song from Home on the Range right now if you wanted. It's a funny movie. I liked it. I
don't know. All right, back to this movie. What were you going to say? I'll cut you off.
I have no idea. Oh, the colors. I was going to talk about the colors. You said it was a really pretty movie, and it is. It's like, it's visually stunning. I love the colors that they use in it. You know, it's a lot of really bright colors and royal colors and the gold tones that they use. And one of the things that always, like, you mentioned the sunset,
Yeah.
With the shadow, there's a lot of sunsets in this movie. And they really take those colors of, sunset and show it reflecting off of, just like the jewels on her skirt or the water or stuff like that. And I just, it's a very pretty movie.
Yeah, it's like, it seems like this whole movie's at dusk.
Right? There's a lot of sunset in this movie.
So before we wrap this up, there's a little bit of creepy trivia here.
Creepy trivia. The song Hellfire is considered one of the darkest songs written for a Disney film. Duh.
Yeah.
It was nearly cut from the film. The scene where Judge Frollo sings Hellfire and sees Esmeralda dancing in the fire before him, the MPAA insisted that the Disney animators make Esmeralda's clothing more well-defined because she seemed nude.
Yeah, it was probably just a silhouette, and it was just like she was dancing naked in the fire.
Yep, so instead they gave her some, like, flowy, scarfy type of things. But yeah, naked Esmeralda dancing in the fire.
Take the kids. Oh, brother. So, another interesting trivia, which we brought a little bit before, but the film, due to its dark nature and sexual themes, nearly became the first animated Disney film to receive a PG rating from the MPAA since The Black Cauldron. It is the last Disney animated film to use harsh language, hell, damn, and hellfire. And I have to say, I mean, it's like, there's Sleeping Beauty, and at the end of Sleeping Beauty, when Maleficent says, and all the powers of hell, like, that was just jarring as a child.
Not as jarring as this one.
No, I know, but I'm just remembering watching Sleeping Beauty as a kid, and just like, we're like, oh man, this is real. Like, she's talking some real stuff right now. Like, this ain't, it's about to go down. All the powers of hell are coming out. So, I would love to know, children's reaction to this, because that's one thing we don't have information on.
What I would love to know? I would love to know how much Disney paid the MPAA to not have this have a PG rating, because this should have a PG rating.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. It was a weird time, and now this totally would have a PG rating, and it's not like a bad thing.
But I agree with you. I don't really get the whole rating system. It's kind of bull, but especially when it comes to horror movies and whatnot. But yeah, the fact that this movie has a G rating is a bit misleading. So. I don't think that you should let your 3-year-old watch this movie by themselves at night, like, for the first time ever.
Right. This is not a babysitter movie.
You might need parental supervision during the first viewing of this. They might have some questions. I mean, my son doesn't, so he loves this movie.
Right on. Well, you know.
Yeah, he likes the gargoyles and the pigeons.
Just like his mother.
Right. But Hunchback. Yay.
Alrighty. Well, that's going to do it.
Good show.
Yay, Hunchback.
And if you haven't, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Hunchback, seriously, what are you waiting for? Like, what? I don't even understand. It's an amazing movie. It's visually stunning. It's super entertaining. It's hella dark. And it's part of the Disney Renaissance. And if you are a Disney fan and you have not seen all of the movies that came out of the Disney Renaissance, we need to talk.
Yeah, you and Roxy are going to have a conversation.
You are grounded. Go to your Netflix.
It's almost time to get out of here, but before that happens, I have a few things to mention. I have a correction to bring to you from our last episode, episode 51. The episode was about the extinct attraction called Phantom Theater that was in Kings Island in Cincinnati, Ohio. If you missed that episode, we discussed it because it's a Haunted Mansion ripoff ride. But while discussing it, I was mixing up manners. I was saying different manners and getting everything all confused. So I just want to set the record straight so everyone knows exactly what's up. Because the attraction was called Phantom Theater. Sometimes I referred to it as Phantom Manor, which is the haunted mansion in Disneyland Paris. So that was a mistake. And I might at some point have referred to it as Mystic Manor, which is the haunted mansion in Hong Kong Disneyland. And just to be super clear, I was talking about the music in Phantom Theater. Sounded Danny Elfman-esque, and as if you heard it, it was a ripoff of the Beetlejuice theme, which was, of course, written and composed by Danny Elfman. And it is the music in Mystic Manor at Hong Kong Disneyland that was written and performed by Danny Elfman. So hopefully everything's all clear with all the manners. And everything's well. I'd like to give a special shout out to Theme Park Adventure. That's TPA Magazine on Twitter for bringing all this to my attention. But if you would like to get in touch with me, let me tell you how. You can email the show by emailing creepykingdom@gmail.com. And you can check out all the other podcasts that Monster Movie Media produces. The Even Changes the Podcast, Roxy's World, and coming soon, Curvy Cutie Chat. You can find all the podcast goodness by going to monstermoviemedia.com. And for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay, and fan art pics, links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and Pinterest, all you need to do is go to creepykingdom.com. Well, until next time.
Keep it creepy.
I have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams.